Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
For us, golf is simple. It's a chance to get out and have some fun with our friends. But inevitably, little things have a way of ruining it. The group ahead is taking forever, you can't find the fairway with a map, and the bev cart is nowhere to be found. And the best way to make a bad day better is Fireball Whiskey. You get their nips, the little shooters. They are great. Makes bad day way, way, way better. Make sure to grab the new Fireball Birdie Shot Club. It's literally a golf club filled with Fireball nips. Put it in your bag. It'll fit right in that side pocket. Drink Fireball nips and have a great time on the golf course.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. When did cheap plastic disposables with 90s-style graffiti art become the norm? No offense if Gaudi Pastel is your style, but the Flonk Max Smart embodies a smarter way to vape. The Flonk is sleek and discreet, and the most popular flavors are available nicotine-free and in 2% and 5% strength. A flexible disposable with a smart LED screen, the Flonk churns out 10,000 dense and delicious puffs. Visit MyPod.com and use promo code STOOL for 25% off Flonk vapes.
On today's Part of My Take, we have an interview with Forrest Gump writer, Oscar winner, big time Hollywood guy, Eric Roth.
A Hollywood so-and-so.
Hollywood so-and-so, Eric Roth. Talk about his career, talk about writing Forrest Gump, some of the other movies, some of the misses, some of the ones that he thought were great. Interesting interview, because we don't really know what it takes to write a movie, even though we're trying to write a movie. We have Hot Seat Cool Throne. We have a Mount Rushmore, special feel-good Mount Rushmore. We have Guys on Chicks, and Hank is on vacation, so Billy Football is filling in for him with the Hot Seat Cool Throne. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Okay, let's go. Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by the Cash App. Go download it right now, and also go to their Twitch channel, twitch.tv/cashapp, where you can get free money every single time they go live by dropping your cash tag in their chat. Today is Wednesday, June 3rd. We're here.
We're still here.
Yeah, so we're going to do the regular show. We just want to tell everyone, if you missed Monday's show, Arian Foster's interview, I would highly, highly recommend going and listening to it. We talked about everything that's going on in America right now. I think the feedback was overwhelmingly positive, which I'm very happy about. Our listeners are the best listeners, and hopefully some minds were changed. I know my mind was changed instantly on, we can start here, the Instagram Blackout Tuesday. 2 days ago, that's something we would have made fun of in terms of like, oh, we solve racism by blacking out our Instagram.
Yeah, pat ourselves on the back
right,
for it. But that he did talk about that and discuss like sometimes showing a little sign of visibility can help people. I know I've heard from a lot of our listeners, and I do want to point this out, that the feedback has been 99.9% positive for the discussion.
Yes.
Even a lot of people that were like, I don't necessarily agree with everything Arian says. Arian has a very unique perspective, and he's done his homework. He knows what the different arguments out there are against his point of view, and he does a very good job of saying why he disagrees with them. The feedback I've gotten has been amazing. And to your point, Big Cat, just letting people know that we have their back.
Yeah,
in a situation like that, we support. I definitely did not solve anything. I did not make a dent in anything by putting a little black square on my Instagram today, but I did receive messages from people saying, hey, I do appreciate you saying this. So that's all a bonus from there.
The biggest thing I took away from Arian talking with him on Sunday, small wins matter. So mm-hmm. small wins matter. I definitely just 2 days ago would have made fun of a movement like that, Instagram blackout movement like that, because it does feel a little pat on your back. But guess what? It's not about me. It's about supporting people who are hurting right now, and we're going to do that. We will continue to do that. So please go listen to the interview if you missed it. We will...
I've even decided that after this show, I'm going to go outside, and I'm going to walk up to a department store window and have somebody take a picture of me holding a drill
and then get
and then
Beamer.
Hand it right back to them, and then I'm going to hop in my Uber
How
XL.
How about that? That woman. Woo! That was... Got to do it for the
are
gram.
Are you talking about her outfit? Or
no. Just getting out of the Beamer, holding a drill... limp-wristed, and stopping a guy who is actually trying to put up the board,
yeah,
and then hopping back in the Beamer and going back to wherever she came from.
You know what? It is good to get everybody together to unite and say, that is a piece of
that
shit
person
right there.
Sucks.
I think we can all agree and say that that person did, well, who knows if they suck or not, what they did was a pretty shitty thing.
Yeah. So, bottom line is, we're trying to navigate this as best we can. We're hoping to expand some minds whenever we can, use our platform in a good way. But we also understand that our platform is to give people a break and listen to us be idiots.
I do understand
so
that I'm an idiot.
Let's do that first by hopping right into getting mad about Peter King's rankings. He put out his power rankings, the NFL power rankings, and boy, am I mad.
Are they worse than Prisco's rankings?
They're
neck and neck.
Okay, let's start.
I feel like Peter King has had some shots fired at him recently and felt the need to step his takes up. Peter has always been a real milquetoast kind of guy where he's afraid to make his takes are the anti-take,
right.
Which is like, hey, this team could be goodish.
Right.
And recently he sees that people are paying more attention to Prisco's takes because Peter King thinks that he thinks things, and Prisco knows that he knows things.
When Peter King goes to a Thai restaurant, they're like, let's make sure we give him the least spicy dish on the menu.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to go, I'll go down it. You just stop me when you have, that doesn't sound right, because I have a few as well. All right, Chiefs 1, got it. Makes sense. Ravens 2, great. Makes sense. Saints 3, cool. No problem there. 49ers 4, Bucks 5, I'm actually okay with this.
He's putting a lot of stock in that.
I'm okay with the Bucks being 5 because the Bucks weren't, like, they had the core of a decent team last year. They just had a quarterback that threw 30 interceptions.
One thing, and a lot of offensive players that didn't make tackles on linebackers
Correct.
Returning the interceptions
Correct.
For touchdowns. I also think that the running game in Tampa is underrated. We've reached that. It's swinging that direction mm-hmm. in my mind where so many people are talking about Tom Brady and Gronk and Mike Evans. That no one's talking about Barber and the rushing attack that they had, which was pretty effective.
And
last
they had
year.
A pretty good defense, too. So Bucks 5, fine with that. Seahawks 6, cool with that. You know what I'm also cool with? I'm actually fine with Titans at 7. I'm okay with Titans at 7.
But,
if they can continue what they did at the end of last year, that's a really good team.
But here's what I love about having the Titans at 7 is you give a lot of daylight for Titans fans to get pissed off about being at 7
mm-hmm.
because they can be like, we beat the Ravens last year.
Right. But, all right, so here's where it gets a little spicy. Raiders at 8.
Okay.
The Raiders.
All right.
The team that hasn't gone to the playoffs in a while, I don't think. Yes, they've upgraded. Yes, they had a lot of draft capital. I think they're going to be good, but 8?
Once you get out of the top 5, you can tell which coaches and quarterbacks return Peter King's calls.
Correct. So
because
John
that's kind of
right on.
That's
it.
Also why Tom Brady's up there is because
yeah.
he calls him back.
9 Cowboys. I'm okay with that as well. 10 Steelers. I don't know how you rank the Raiders ahead of the Steelers when the Steelers had probably the best defense down the stretch, and then they get Ben Roethlisberger, I guess. I guess you could say the question mark is Ben Roethlisberger, but if he's – I mean, their quarterback play was not good.
Derek Carr's ceiling is like – is like right. Ben Roethlisberger's belly.
So I'd flip those. Vikings at 11, that seems, I feel like as long as Kirk Cousins on the Vikings, they will always be ranked between 11 and 16.
I would put them immediately at 16.
Yeah, right.
That's the Vikings spot. The Seahawks are always number 6.
Yeah.
The Vikings are always number 16.
Packers 12, that's fine.
Love it.
Bills at 13, The Bills should be ahead of the Raiders.
Yes.
The Bills, I mean, the Bills should win the AFC East this year.
And we haven't gotten to the Texans yet either.
We're going to have to wait for the Texans, okay. Buddy.
All right, so wait, Bills at 13?
13.
There's some
disrespect.
Okay, there's also some Josh Allen MVP buzz that's been going around.
Starting here
3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I don't want too much pressure on that. So I'm disregarding all the preseason buzz for Josh Allen.
Okay, so Bills 13, Colts 14, Eagles 15. I'm actually okay. So this is my 14 through 17 is actually the zone where you're basically saying they're going to finish either five power ranks ahead of where I'm at or five worse.
Yeah.
Like you could see the Colts being the eighth best team or the ninth best team, or you could see him being the 19th best team.
Philip Rivers. That's a big question.
So these four are all lumped in together, I would say. The Colts at 14, the Eagles at 15, the Rams at 16, the Bears at 17. I think all those teams are, if everything goes right, they're going to be like the fifth, sixth, or seventh team to make the playoffs. If everything goes wrong, they will be in the top, 12 picks.
Yes, if the Bears have as many wins as they have tight ends, they will jump up
three spots from there. Yeah. But I think that's actually a pretty appropriate place for the Bears to be, for the Rams. It's pretty much like they have the bones to be a good team, but they have to do some things right to get there.
The Eagles have the bones. They don't have the ligaments. So yes. If Carson Wentz can stay healthy, then I think they'll be top 10.
Another spicy one. Next two spicy ones. These are going to be the dark horse teams all summer long. Cardinals at 18, which I kind of like.
Cardinals, they're right now, I'm just calling it, they are going to be everyone's dark horse team.
Yes, the Regis Philbin team.
Yeah, because it's going to be like they can't be as bad as they were last year, plus year two with a new coach.
And also need to remind everyone, because I need to remind myself every 2 weeks, DeAndre Hopkins is on the Cardinals.
That's true, I forgot.
Like you keep forgetting, but it's the truth.
I forgot.
Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins.
I want to hear some Kyler Murray offseason stories. I want to hear that Kyler is showing up
MVP
in the best
buzz.
Season or best shape of his life. I want to hear that he grew 2 inches in the offseason.
Dolphins 19, another one where I actually like that. I think that the fact that Dolphins were trying to tank, won five games, beat the Patriots in a game the Patriots wanted to win in week 17 in Foxborough, and still got the quarterback they were trying to tank for. I'm okay with
him at
19.
Great job of trusting the process. Although it does depend who's starting it. Is it going to be Tua? Is it going to be Fitzy? Fitzpatrick's still on the roster, right?
I think so, yeah.
So Fitzpatrick.
Josh Rosen.
I would put Fitzpatrick, if he's starting, they should be in the top 10 for the first five weeks of the season.
Yep.
Because that's when Fitzmagic is going to come out.
Broncos 20. They're a big question mark team. I could see the Broncos being really good team, and I could see them not. Who knows what they're going
to
be?
I'd put Broncos in the 12 to 15 region. I'm a Drew Lock guy.
Yeah, the problem is when you do this, you end up with 18 teams in the 12 to 15 range.
Yeah, here's how it goes. I've got a top five, and then I've got 10 teams at 12, and then I've got a 30 and 31 and 32.
Right. All right, here's the shockers. Patriots at 21. I don't know how you put a Bill Belichick team at 21.
I think you just answered the question. I think Bill Belichick told Peter King put him at 21.
That's one where you just – wherever you put – if Peter King, if you're writing this down and you're doing your power rankings and you put the Patriots at 21, you should then automatically just bump them up four spots because of Bill Belichick.
I think that Peter King also stumbled his way into getting page views because he knows that Jerry Thornton is going to write seven articles 21. About the Patriots being at 21.
21. Texans at 22.
Okay, that's a pretty far drop. Now, to be fair, they don't have any players anymore.
No.
So that's pretty high for not having a roster.
They still have Deshaun Watson. Chargers. They have Will Fuller for the first half of the first game.
That's true. They've got Will Fuller. They've got David Johnson.
Actually, he might get injured in the preseason.
They have David Johnson.
Which is actually, I think that's a bad thing because Bill O'Brien's we got to feed David Johnson.
It'll make
anymore.
Matthew Berry very happy if that's what the case is. If they do, in fact, have David Johnson on the team and Will Fuller for a game and J.J. Watt, and they always have a couple
five.
Good linebackers.
Yeah. All right, so then we rattle off the end here. So Chargers at 23, Browns at 24. Those teams could definitely make the playoffs. They could also just suck. The Falcons at 25.
I'm actually going to put the Browns at 13.
Oh, wow.
I'm a Browns believer. They're going back to the fullback game this year.
I like what the Browns have done, too. I think they should be higher. But, again, once you make them higher, then you have to make everyone lower. Falcons at 25. Peter must not realize they have literally a first-round pick at 10 out of 11 positions on offense.
And they haven't played their best game of 2017 yet.
Nope. Still coming. Lions at 26. Bengals at 27. Jets at 28. Panthers at 29. And then we finish off with Giants, Redskins, Jaguars.
Okay. Panthers, I think, should also be a little bit higher.
Eh.
New head coach and new quarterback in town. I always bump that up like 5 stars. Wait, what are the bottom five again?
So it goes Jets, Panthers, Giants, Redskins, Jaguars.
Jaguars at 32 feels low. After Doug
Marone. Who else would be 32?
Doug Marone cried and rallied the troops.
Who would be 32?
And they got Minshew Magic. 32, nobody. Nobody should start the season at 32.
Oh, wow. Look at you. Participation trophy, PFT.
That's a good question. Who would I have as my
probably
number 32?
Probably the Redskins.
Team? Maybe the R-Words, yeah. Although, I like Ron Rivera.
Yeah. And I
Jets. Actually, Jets at 32.
I actually think the Giants could, of those five bottom teams, if I had to pick one of those five bottom teams to make the playoffs, I would throw in the Giants. Just because the NFC never makes sense. Daniel Jones, maybe he stops fumbling all the time. I don't know.
I would put Jets at 32 on the fact that Joe Flacco will not be ready for the start of the season.
Joe Judge is not Pat Shurmur.
Their special teams is going to be good.
That's at least like 6 points. So, yeah, those are the rankings. It feels good, though, to just get mad about some rankings that mean nothing.
It is weird to have a team at 32 that has a returning coach and quarterback from last year.
Yeah. But
I mean, if you wanted to,
someone's got to be 32.
If you wanted to make the Raiders argument at 32, I think you could actually make an argument for that.
All right, so that's Peter King. We also have baseball maybe coming back. Who knows? So essentially, everything I understand that I've read, and it's dangerous that I'm reading now, but the owners have flexed back on the players. So the players said, we made a deal in March. We're playing for prorated salaries of how many games we play. The owners tried to get them off of that. The players said, fuck that. So then the owner said, oh, that deal also says how many games we can play. So the owners get to decide the amount of games. So they say, oh, if we have to pay you prorated, then we'll just play 50 games and pay you not much money.
But it sounds like the players are kind of okay with it.
Yeah, I hope that they land more like 70, 80 games. I think 50 is probably – 50 would be exciting, but it also would be maddening – to watch a team like the 50, Mariners are a bad case because they fell off like faster than that. But I think they were 13-2 last year, and they ended up with like one of the worst records in baseball.
And the Nationals stunk for the first 50 games.
50 games is tough.
Great. Yeah,
70, 80, I think you can weed out. Like, you'll still have a couple teams where you can point to and say there's no way they would have lasted an entire season. But at least it can be a little bit closer to these are the good teams, these are the bad teams.
There's also something that I like about baseball being such a drawn-out season. I don't think that it should be as long as it is, but there's something nice about forgetting about baseball for a couple weeks and then coming back to it and be like, oh, yeah, here's what's happening in baseball now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like getting distracted and forgetting about it. Plus, the pace of a baseball game doesn't really seem to line up with a super fast season.
Right.
Like it's a slow burn. Like football, it makes sense. It's a fast game. It's a fast season. Baseball, a very slow game, having every game mean a lot might be exhilarating, but it might be just kind of weird.
Yeah, it will be. We have the potential now of having, in the fall, baseball, playoffs, NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, and then football. All in the same, like, September and October, clear your schedule, you're not doing anything.
It's a new season, so it's not fall, it's not winter. September and October is just going to be sports season.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
All sports all the time.
It's going to be fucking great. It's going to be the amount of money I'm going to have it play every single night makes my fucking nuts tingle. Okay, let's do our hot seat cool throne, and then we'll get to Eric Roth. Billy, the only time we will let you drink, the only time we let you drink.
Billy is so happy right now.
Billy, so he is a wide receiver, folks. He caught that. You have to.
Don't shotgun it, Billy.
Don't shotgun it. Billy immediately took out his keys.
He had his keys out.
He was ready to fucking slam. No, open it. No, open it like a regular human being. Okay, open it like a regular human being.
Oh, Billy figured out how to press a button.
Wait. And it starts as soon as I start reading the ad. And you have to try to finish before I finish the ad. Okay? All right. Billy is he's venting. He's venting it. This is some fucking Elon Musk SpaceX shit. He's venting his can. his Bud Light seltzer can. All right, ready? Hot Seat Cool Throne is brought to you by our friends at Bud Light Seltzer. Try it for yourself and see why great tasting. Oh my God, Billy's done. Bud Light Seltzer is putting every other hard seltzer on the hot seat.
Jesus, Billy.
Try to go check out Bud Light Seltzer. Billy, that was impressive. That's you did vent, though.
That's what you were born to do. You use
PEDs.
He's
so happy that we let him drink. God damn. All right, Billy, you kick it off. Hot Seat Cool Throne. Hank is on vacation. I don't know if you heard.
Wally Pitt, baby.
Hank decided he's going to run away to his second home.
Mm-hmm. Which is just everywhere else besides his first home. This is, to be fair, kidding, though, this is only his like fourth vacation.
And he also gave us a big heads up like a month ago that he was going to go on vacation. We said, we can handle without you.
He did. So.
Oh, wait.
Billy, are
there's
you nervous?
No chance that Hank's going to listen to this, so let's leave a word.
Okay, so the word for Hank is chin.
Chin. If Hank tweets us the word chin by 10 a.m. tomorrow, he's got to tweet at PFT, myself, Liam, Billy, and the Pardon My Take account. He just has to tweet the word chin. If he does that, that means he listened. Mm-hmm. If not,
he has to get a cat.
And no one tip him off.
Have you done this to me before?
Every single episode, dude.
What?
Okay, shut up. All right, here we go. Hot Seat Cool Throne, Hank, your word's chin. All right, Billy, Hot Seat Cool Throne.
Hot seat.
In the mic. Into the mic.
That seltzer's hitting me.
Lightweight.
Oh, wait.
Talk into the mic.
It's here.
There you go.
Back up just a little.
Hot seat. Jake Paul.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jake Paul is on a serious hot seat. I am not putting him on the hot seat.
You kind of look like him.
I'm like the Waluigi to him.
Wait, the what? You're the what?
That's so
if
true.
If he's Mario, I'm like Wario. Like
No. You're the
Waluigi.
Waluigi.
You're Waluigi. The Waluigi. Waluigi. Yeah, Waluigi.
Waluigi.
No, Waluigi. No, Waluigi. You said it right. Waluigi. It's like when you have a really big loogie and you're like
Waluigi. Anyway, I think I'm not putting him on the hot seat because I'm not in the.
What are you talking? Right? Just put him on.
The internet put him on the hot seat.
You're gonna defend him?
I'm not defending him at all. I'm just announcing just what the internet has done to him.
I'm reporting.
In no place to say what he did was. But anyway,
Billy, let's back
cannot
up a
take
little bit.
A stand on Jake Paul.
No, I more don't
seltzers.
Like him.
No more seltzers. For
I don't
Billy.
Like him. But
there's good Pauls on all
he
sides.
He was running around a
Paul Lives Matter.
He was running around a destroyed mall, filming a video.
Destroyed mall makes it sound like it was already destroyed.
It was
part
how
of
it was
the
in
destruction.
The
mall. Was he touring the ruins of a mall?
I'm not gonna start anything. But he wasn't on video destroying anything. But
okay.
I could imagine. But like. Everyone's he basically was exploiting the protest and all the stuff happening for a video, which
is very Paul-esque.
That's Paul. Paul
which is very,
yes.
Just not morally
the Paul
right.
See like, something and they're like, ooh, how can I get
Jake
my
Paul is the Forrest Gump of clout chasers. He just shows up anytime there's a big event and he's like, I'm in it too for a vlog.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's disgusting and everyone on the internet thinks it's disgusting. And so he's on the hot seat. He released an apology saying that, oh, I wasn't doing it I was doing it to document it, and I was like, I mean,
oh, he's like a videographer, he's
right,
a historian,
he's
a
journalist. You're seeing him, he's like he's not doing a Ken Burns documentary, I'll tell you that.
Nice. Yeah. That was his fucking own.
Nice.
I got it.
He's an embedded reporter in the protest.
You don't dress up in all that swag and run around if you're not like trying to make a scene of it.
True.
Mm-hmm. So he was, do we know what mall it was? Like in Scottsdale
somewhere?
It was
in Arizona. Somewhere? Yeah, it was in Arizona.
We should later this summer.
That's why I'm low gang. I've always been low gang.
We should, that's
Logan?
His brother. We should we should like follow Billy around in New York City, pretending he's a Paul brother.
If you put a mask on, which you should be wearing,
not,
by the
I'm
way, Billy,
yeah.
You would look like
I have a bandana.
Okay,
so.
You would not look like a Paul.
Yeah, we should do that. All right, what's your cool throne?
My cool throne is also in Arizona. John Bones Jones.
Yeah,
okay.
He was running around. He's like legitimately was probably the most badass man in a 3-state radius,
mm-hmm.
and he was just out there like. Taking like spray cans and like weapons from a bunch of like toothpick dudes who are just not there for any productive reason, and it was like sick because you just see these guys like John Bon Jones runs up and they're just shitting their pants and they're like, mm-hmm. I just wanted to like rage with my boys and cause trouble, and boom, John Bon Jones, and they're just like
Bones Jones.
Absolutely yeah. getting baited by like the biggest alpha.
And he's probably I don't think he's in between fights. I don't even know what his status right now with the UFC is, but you'd have to imagine he's on a cycle or two.
He's always probably, in between fights.
He's
yeah.
probably deep.
It's good yeah. to see him yeah. on, you know, showing that he can go on both sides of the law occasionally.
Yeah.
Dude, so I mean, honestly, it looked the
it's
video.
Like when what's that movie, Catch Me If You Can, where they hire Frank Abagnale yeah. at the end yeah. to be the guy that spots forged documents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like using John Bon Jones to find people that are carrying weapons illegally is yeah. actually the most brilliant pick that you can
make. Think like a criminal.
It's like, so the video looks like the exact same street that, I mean, his DUI footage was from. So it's kind
so
of funny.
He knows the
like,
lay of the land.
Like, legitimately.
Well, maybe he doesn't because he was right. drunk.
Yeah, I mean, he was shooting an AK-47 out of his sunroof, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool if it wasn't in a populated area.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in the middle of the desert doing that, like, sick.
Right.
But people
right.
around.
Use your guns in deserts
but
only, folks.
This was also in Arizona, so in, like, in my head, I just have this sick fantasy where John Bon Jones, like, rolled up on Jake Paul doing stupid shit, and there was, like, some, like, confrontation, and Jake Paul was just absolutely, like, bitched out.
That would be, you know how, you know how Logan Paul keeps trying to fight Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
These two should fight and call it, they should call it John Paul Jones, We Have Not Yet Begun to Fight.
Oof, that's good.
I don't get that right.
It's a deep history. He was the captain. Go look it up.
Okay,
well, go look it up.
Yeah, that's going to end up being a deep dive. All right, good job, Billy. Good job. Way to go.
Nailed it.
All right.
Now go pass out.
PFT, what's your hot seat cool truck?
My hot seat is my oven, ironically. My oven ironically got roasted online yesterday. So I made baked chicken wings because I'm a beta cuck and I'm trying to cut down on oils. And so I baked these chicken wings to get them nice and crispy. They're not ever going to get as crispy as when you fry them,
mm-hmm.
but I stumbled into Kitchen Online. What is it? Kitchen Instagram.
Instagram
is what
yep.
I ran afoul of, and I had probably 50 people telling me, bro, you should use an air fryer. So I spent about 30 minutes just watching sick air fryer videos last night.
You should
night.
Get one. They're sick.
Are they?
Yeah.
Do you have one?
It's the only thing I know how to use. All you do is you just put the stuff in.
This is exactly what happened to me like 100 times last night. I ended up buying one, so I'm purchasing an air fryer. I guess it's
nice.
Like, there's always one kitchen appliance that's going to solve all your problems, like the latest one. Last year, I think it was the Instapot or the Hot Pot or whatever. Now, I guess it's the air fryer. So I copped an air fryer. So congratulations, Internet. You won. My oven's on the hot seat.
I love it.
Can I make soup in an air fryer, Bubba?
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything.
Okay,
you can
fried
literally
soup.
Do anything.
Love it. My cool throne is Lenny Dykstra's Public Image.
Oh, yeah.
So Lenny Dykstra, it was ruled by an actual court of law in the United States that you cannot libel Lenny Dykstra because his reputation is already so bad that you can't make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
He's written books and he's been on the record saying the worst possible things to the point where you cannot make him seem like more of a scoundrel than he's already admitted to being, which is like the goal.
Nothing you can say.
There's no, you can't damage him anymore. He's
that he's done to himself.
He shot the moon with his reputation. It's become so bad that it's actually an asset to
I
him.
Love it.
So
good job, Lenny.
I mean, I kind of look at this as a challenge. Could we possibly?
Yeah, we could, but we don't want to. But we could.
He's the final boss of slander.
Yeah. Anyone could try. I don't know.
I heard he fucked a pig.
Ooh. Okay.
I heard Lenny Dykstra fucks pigs.
Oh, wow. So that might actually get us in trouble.
Lenny Dykstra fucked a pig.
Wow. Okay. If PFT gets sued, that was not me.
It would be the best Supreme Court case of all time.
what are you going
to
do, Billy?
He did it to save a royal person.
What?
Black Mirror.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
He fucked a pig to save Netflix.
There we go. All right. My hot seat is Phil Rivers and Roy Williams, because researchers found that saying the word fuck can improve your threshold for pain. So, and they actually found if you use words in place of fuck, it's worse. So when you say fudge or dang it or gosh darn it, it's worse than just letting out a good fuck.
Because you're suppressing the fuck.
Yeah, so
the fuck
it's like a
builds
sneeze.
Within you.
So
yeah.
Phil Rivers could have been, he already is a tough guy. He's played through a lot of injuries. Could you imagine what he would be like as a quarterback if he actually said fuck?
Do you think if Phil Rivers starts cussing, then he wins the Super Bowl?
Probably.
Yeah.
This is his final hill that he has to get over.
I'll donate $1,000 to charity if Phil Rivers just says fuck on a video?
Yes.
Do you hate charity, Phil?
Come on, Phil.
Say it.
Just so say it.
Cool throw real, and Saint Clown
I'll match it 1,000. It's got to be a like real good fuck.
Yeah. Just that's all you have to say. It doesn't have to be directed towards anyone.
$2,000, Phil. All right, and then my cool throne is Dan Bilzerian, because he had a tweet after everyone was participating in Blackout Tuesday saying, people are more concerned with looking like a good person than being a good person, which would imply that Dan Bilzerian is a good person.
Dan Bilzerian is saying that other people are too concerned with their image.
Yes.
Instead of being a good
and
person.
And also accusing people of trying to look like a good person when really the important thing is acting like a good person, which he's never done.
There's no airbrush for your conscience, and no one knows that better than
what
Dan.
What a tweet from him. Incredible.
Do we have to bleep out his last name?
Yeah. Dan B. No,
Dan,
we don't.
Dan B.
John B. I would die for John B. Yeah, so that was a hell of a tweet from him.
Good for him.
Like, hey, guys, stop worrying about your Instagram. Dan Bilzerian saying that. Stop worrying about your Instagram and social media and start worrying about making a change in your life.
And start worrying about social media.
Stop trying to post those 10 hot chicks in your private plane and get to fucking them.
Dan Bilzerian is sick of everyone else posting pictures of their lavish lifestyles. That would be sick, though, if Dan Bilzerian gave up all his earthly possessions and became like into the wild.
Yeah.
And then got mauled by a grizzly bear.
He's, oh, by the way, if you just scroll, the fifth picture back is him with five women all naked with tits on Twitter, which I didn't know they allowed that, but it's pretty cool. But yeah, going through old pics, this book gonna be crazy is what his tweet was only like 2 weeks ago. So
good for him.
Right. Oh, he also has
we all evolved. Yeah,
with this, he's sitting next to there's the Instagram model sitting like in his lap and he's got his computer out and someone took the picture and the headline is just writing my book. yes, Dan.
God damn it, Dan.
Way to go, Dan.
Thank you for taking this.
Hell yes, man. All right, let's get to our interview. We have Eric Roth, Hollywood. He's a movie writer, wrote Forrest Gump, wrote a bunch of great movies that you know. Interesting conversation with him.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Okay, here he is, Eric Roth. Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is screenwriter, Academy Award winner. He wrote Forrest Gump. You probably have seen it. I'd say everyone in America has seen it. It's Eric Roth.
It's my favorite movie of all time.
Well, that was going to be my first question. Is it weird? I think that if you asked everyone in America what their favorite movie is, they're like you would win the popular vote in terms of Forrest Gump being the number one answer.
It's that you well. It feels here. Wait, I'll show you my Oscar.
Oh yes, Oscar thing. In the house. Oscar in the house.
There will be.
I really do think that though. Oh my God, that's shiny.
How heavy is that?
Heavy. My father, after I won it, picked it up and he dropped it on a table.
Did you when you won the Oscar? Were you like, that's it? I'm good.
Yeah, I actually, because I'm basically kind of shy and. The idea of going up there to speak, I wanted to throw up, you know. And but when they announced my name, it just you get this giant adrenaline rush. And I remember saying to myself, "They can't take this away from me."
Yeah,
so,
true.
That was sort of that was that. It was amazing experience. And I remember we had had a three or four previews, and we were on some kind of plane home, a private plane, after some giant screening in San Jose with Tom Hanks and. The director Bob Zemeckis and the studio people, and they said that you will never be here again because this is like the most amazing reaction they've ever seen from a movie. Wow. So it's like, and I don't think I obviously hadn't repeated that. I've had some nice things that have happened, but nothing like that.
Yeah,
I heard a rumor that you write all your screenplays in MS-DOS. Is that true?
I do. It's It's a program called Movie Master that's long since out of existence. They couldn't figure out how to translate it to use it for email. So at some point and everything, the advantage and disadvantage of it is that it runs out of memory after like 30 pages. So that's good for making act breaks. So you're potentially, you know, where your script could be a little bit shorter than longer. And then the problem is if you fuck up and don't save it, you're going to lose it.
Right.
But yeah, it's weird. I also have it backwards for some reason. I have white type on a black page, and it should be the other way around if you're going to sort of imitate a typewriter.
Oh,
that's it. You're like Jim Harbaugh, the coach of Michigan. He writes all his plays, like he scripts out his playbook, and furthermore, like every email that he sends, he types it all up in Excel, and then he copies and pastes, or he just like prints out.
Yeah,
giant
this is
spreadsheets.
Like crazy. It's just what I got. I'm not that. I'm sort of a Luddite with this stuff, and I think Forrest Gump. I wrote it on typewriter, actually.
Wow.
Would you say that the book is better than the movie Forrest Gump? Or are you saying that the movie?
No, I think it's not even close.
I like that.
There you go.
No, I mean, I think the author is a talented man, and I couldn't have imagined it without him. But I think I just took off in my own direction, and something spoke to me, you know. And I know when I'm good, and I know when I'm not so good. You know, I know the movies I've written that are good, and those that just didn't work.
Oh, that's interesting. So, is there one that comes to mind where you're like, I wish I could have redone that a little bit?
Right? Yeah, like there's a movie. I mean, it's a little bit. The movie called Lucky You, which is a poker movie,
okay,
which was with Eric Bana and Drew Barrymore, that I wrote just as an original, and I'm not much of a poker player. I don't have the patience for it, but I liked the whole idea of it, and I even named the main character after a kind of at that point well-known poker player called Huck Seed, the movie just didn't work, but the director, I can't speak ill of him because it turned out he had Alzheimer's, and he died shortly thereafter. So it was just a disappointment that the movie wasn't what I had hoped it would be, you know?
Right.
But it could have been my fault. I mean, there's a few that probably I screwed up.
Yeah. So speaking about writing, which you just mentioned, I saw an article where you gave the 5 keys to writing, and number 5 was that writer's block doesn't exist.
Yeah, I've had places where I've gotten sort of stopped, but I just finished a script for Clint Eastwood, which he hasn't gotten it yet. I sent it in like last week, and it's going through our producer, Bradley Cooper, and he's just about to read it, so I hope he likes it. But in that, I got stopped, and same thing I'd always advise people was, change the weather. In other words, make it rain, make it snow. Do something different just with the weather, and all of a sudden you have a different look at things, you know?
Wait, so change the weather in the script or change
the
weather?
In the script. No, I can't change. I'm not that powerful.
Well, I thought maybe you're like, I'm just going to fly to Alaska now and try to finish this off in the cold.
That's a funny idea. Yeah. No, I just change the weather. Maybe it's arrogance, though. I just probably have the arrogance to think I can overcome it, and I've always sort of know what I'm writing. I know where I start and where I'm going to end. The middle's kind of a big empty void, but then that's kind of what's fun about it, unless I'm doing a book or something, you know, adapting a book. I mean, I had a great thing happen yesterday. They announced they're going to finally do this movie of mine with Marty Scorsese and Leonardo and Bob De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon. And it's very expensive, like 200 plus million. And, they joined up Apple and Paramount to do it, so it's really exciting. I have no clue when they'll shoot this thing with the way life is going.
But, is it like The Irishman 2?
No, it's a great true story of 1921. I'm sorry, I'm bobbing around. 1921, Oklahoma, Osage Native American tribe, the poorest people probably on the planet, or at least close to it, or at least in America. And they're in the crappiest land you could imagine, were kind of forced there. And they discover oil, and they become one of the wealthiest people in America. And into that comes every cretin creep known to man, and kill 184 of them for their money. And into that comes this guy who was an ex-Texas Ranger and in the first class of the FBI, and a pretty amazing human being named Tom White, who cleans it all up. And the two guys who did the plan the murders are really fascinating people. And I'm not sure which part Leonardo is going to end up playing. He may end up actually playing one of the killers, so we'll see. But it's an incredible story. I don't know, people just never knew about it.
Wow. We were talking to somebody yesterday about what the schedule is going to look like for new productions in Hollywood and what the release schedule is going to look like for the next year and a half. I mean, we all know that, you know, there's not a lot being filmed right now, but are you anticipating like fall of next year, winter of next year, that there aren't going to be any movies coming
out? I just honestly can't tell because my partner's a doctor and she knows too much stuff that makes me nervous, you know? So, because I just talked to Marty's manager this morning, and I'm saying, when does Marty want to make it? He said he'd love to make it this fall, whether he can. Maybe he has to go to Australia. I don't even know. It's an odd – I have a movie coming out I want to pitch kind of that six people will go see, but it's pretty amazing that I did with David Fincher. That's going to come out in October on Netflix about the man who wrote Citizen Kane. It's a really incredible piece. He did a black and white 30s movie. It looks like a 30s movie and feels like one. But so I'm curious how that plays. And then I wrote Dune, which is supposed to come out, you know, at Christmas time. But one wonders what they're going to do with it, because if you have to, you know, reorganize a theater and have only half the number of people there, are they willing to accept $500 million rather than $1 billion?
Right. Right. You're a writing machine. Now, the question that everyone, I'm sure you've been asked.
I'm running out of time. I'm 75 years old with some pretty bad medical conditions, so I'm trying to get everything done before the end of the thing. I'll write a note to you guys before I leave.
Yes. Yeah, so the question, obviously, everyone has probably asked you a million times, because I know there was a rumor that it was going to happen, Forrest Gump 2. Are we going to get back on that horse?
No, that won't happen. I mean, I'll tell you some things that were in it, but I did write the script and I turned it in on 9/10, the day before 9/11. And Bob and Zemeckis, the director, and Tom Hanks and I sat together and we looked at each other and said, that's the end of this. The highlights in that were that I have him get in the back of the Bronco, uh-huh. You know, the OJ Bronco, and they don't see him. And he kind of keeps popping up in the rearview mirror, which is pretty great. And I have him invent the wave in sports.
Okay.
Kind of getting up to call a peanut vendor or something.
That's fantastic.
And everybody follows suit. I have him as a ballroom dancer, like an expert at it, and eventually dances as a kind of just because she's there. He dances for the Queen and Princess Diana. And then he dances with Princess Diana and ends up, you know, you do those kind of things. And this poor woman ended up, you know, this way. And I'm trying to think what else.
To space, yeah, right? He went to space, right?
No, that was supposed to be in the first. That was in the book. I never did that.
Okay. No. I love these, though. If you have any others, I love these.
I have him. He's supposed to have been. He finds his calling in life. He ends up calling bingo on an Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm.
He meets this woman. He lives within a trailer. And basically toward the end of the movie, he waits for her every day at the at a federal building because she teaches in the nursery school there. And he's sitting there and the whole building blows up behind him. It was the Oklahoma City bombing.
Jesus.
Now, that was, you know, sort of the most horrible thing I could think of in, you know, humankind, and then 9/11, of course, happened. And
right.
Now this has happened, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think what else was in the movie. The little boy dies of AIDS early on in the movie. Lieutenant Dan gets shot. He runs for runs for Congress and gets shot and killed. There's just all sorts of stuff that I think end up being pretty spectacular, but I think nobody had the stomach for it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't miss it. I mean, it's like, it's a lovely once in a lifetime kind of thing.
Yeah. I have some questions actually about the movie Forrest Gump, some things that I've always wanted to know about it. When Forrest gets up at the Vietnam protest speech and they pull the cables on him, what does he say in that speech that we don't get to hear?
Okay. I'm so glad you asked. That's one of the great stories. I think it's a great movie story. So I tried to write a really serious speech, right, about my feelings about the war and what, you know, it meant to a guy who fought in it, et cetera, et cetera. And so it didn't quite work for the director. And he said, here, you either have to write the greatest dramatic speech ever written, like a Shakespeare thing, or something really funny. And I said, okay, I'll try it. So I wrote the best I could dramatically, and he didn't dig it. And then I tried to write something funny. I'm not by nature a comedian. And I asked Billy Crystal to try it. He tried it. Robin Williams tried it. I think John Lovett might have tried it. Anyway, a bunch of comedians I had that I knew quite well, they tried it. Didn't work. So what he did, Bob, was have him step up to that microphone and do exactly what you see. Have somebody pull the plug so you can't hear what he's saying, because I never wrote the thing properly. And it's pretty genius, because he has that guy who's supposed to look like Abbie Hoffman next to him, you know, the radical guy who disappeared and all. Mm-hmm. And Abbie Hoffman's the only one who hears it, who says, "That's the, you said it all, man." So that was a true story. And I love that. He's just, Zemeckis is a wacky guy. He's pretty clever.
That's great. My other question was, did you cry when you wrote Forrest's speech to Jenny's gravestone?
Yes, I did. And I remember I wrote it in, we have a house in Whistler, Canada. I remember being alone there and writing it. I cried at that. And I was very moved when the kid, you know, he says, is a kid kind of stupid like me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are things I cry. I do. It's kind of embarrassing when I write some of this stuff, like, and I do the dialogue like out loud. If you walked in the room, you'd think I was completely a moron. You know, it's like, it sounds so terrible. I'm not an actor, but, certain things are like in, Star is Born, I said to the woman that I was, who I'm living with, something, I looked out the window and said, I said her name, and I said, Anne, and she turned around. And I said, I just want to see you again. I just wanted to see you, look at you again. And then I put that in like Star is Born. You know,
yeah.
Bradley Cooper says that to her. So sometimes you can use your own thing.
Writing a movie like Star is Born, where it's been done 3 times before, is that harder or easier?
That was tough. I was 4 times, I think. And it's like, it scared the hell out of me. I thought maybe I made a giant mistake.
Right.
You know, when I said yes, Bradley was very persuasive. And I loved working with him. He and I really, we were texting each other scenes and dialogue at 4 a.m. since neither of us sleep. And Lady Gaga, you know, her voice is from God, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that worked. I mean, it was just, I said, I'll write you a love story and hope people, you know, feel it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many people know this about you, but you also wrote Ali, which is another great movie. And you got to spend some time with Muhammad Ali as you were writing.
Well, I had known him of a sort. I mean, when I was a kid, I boxed Golden Gloves and stuff because I was getting my ass kicked on the way to high school every day. And in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And so when I went and I used to work out at the Gil Clancy's gym, and then the pros would come on in the afternoon on Ali, and I would stay and watch him, and also met like Leroy Neiman there. Remember the painter who did all the sports stuff. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway, so for years we, you know, I went off and on about, and I also by chance had met Ferdy Pacheco in another incarnation. And so when the chance came to write that thing, I mean, I think Muhammad said to Michael Mann, the director, I want Eric to write it, which was really nice. He called Eric the writer, he called me. And he was a wonderful man. At that point, he was obviously challenged because of the Parkinson's. But I want to do, you'll find this interesting, I think, when I was researching the movie a little bit, but even though I knew a lot about boxing, and in the movie is a scene with where he fights Jerry Quarry. If you remember Jerry Quarry, he was kind of a blown up light heavyweight, really. And it was Ali's first fight back from the Vietnam thing, which I'll tell you a very quick story because I had asked Angelo Dundee about this. And I thought he's one of the great men on earth, Angelo. And Angelo was very upset that Ali didn't, go to Vietnam. But he said Angelo had fought, and I think his brother did too, in a terrible battle in World War II called Anzio, where a lot of people died, like maybe 50,000 people died. And Angelo said, I realized finally that that's the reason I fought in that battle, so somebody like Ali could have the choice to go into a war or not.
Yeah.
It was really a pretty amazing, brave guy. We were talking about Ali. I lost my train of thought. Yeah.
I was curious to know when you were writing that movie and dialoguing and having some conversations with Muhammad, was it important to him, or did you get a sense whether he wanted the movie to focus more on what he did in the ring as opposed to what he did outside the ring?
No, I think he wanted everything, and we had the whole point of view of, you know, him being surveilled by the government and everything. My biggest problem with that movie, which was not, I think the movie's really terrific, but and I thought Will Smith did a hell of a job, and everybody did, but there's that great documentary,
yep,
when we were kings. And we started writing, I said to Michael Mann, the director, I said, I've never been able to top that. You know, there's, that's just so real and touching. I think we did. I think we kind of screwed up the ending. If I had to redo the movie, you know, I think the movie could have had a more effective ending. I thought we did a good job of it for something that was a difficult like that.
That's interesting, because when we were kings, if it came out now, I think people would be like, holy shit, this is the greatest documentary ever. It came out before documentaries kind of had their boom. Yeah. I remember my father made me watch it. He was like, you have to watch this documentary. But that's interesting that like something like that can not affect, you know, your writing, but you at least acknowledge it and like, hey, I'm up against just an incredible piece of work.
I never thought I could top that. There's just something so visceral and real and poetic about it, you know? And when your mind's not a documentary, you know, the thing I'm kind of proud of, the first 12 minutes of that movie doesn't have a word of dialogue. And it's just, what's his name? Singing, the guy who got shot going in the motel window. I forget this, but it's a brilliant piece of filmmaking by Michael. I mean, where you get everything that you want to know about of Ali without a word, just a song over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty amazing. It's him doing a live performance, and I don't know why it escapes me his name right now, because he's a great, great performer.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And now, here's more Eric Roth.
A little birdie told me that you are a big horse player. Is that true? Do you love the ponies?
I do. Yeah, I'm kind of hooked.
Yeah. So, how often? Yeah,
I had a bad day today.
I didn't win a bet today. Did you have Churchill?
Where did you play?
Gulfstream and Churchill Downs. Did not win a single bet.
I gave up on Churchill on the weekend.
Yep.
Gulfstream, I've been doing amazing, because you should get these guys, Mike, the workout report.
Okay.
If he gives a B-plus workout, they're 75% winners, I'm telling you. And I've hit some big stuff recently, you know. But I think I'm about to give up playing Gulfstream and just play Santa Anita. I think I've been playing too many tracks at once.
That's absolutely – when you have the moment where you look up and you're like, every 7 minutes you have a race, that's usually a sign like, hey, maybe let's cool down. What do you usually play? Do you just play straight? Do you play exotics, pick fives?
No, I like to play since this came into being, I love playing pick fives.
Same. But I had three pick fives that didn't get out of the first leg, which is the most demoralizing thing.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. That's why I usually all the first leg and the last leg.
That's smart.
What I try to do, and it depends how much money I'm going to invest, but if I can find two singles, you know, one race, this one's to win. I'm just telling people who don't know that thing. And then I have three alls. You can, as they say in horse racing, shit on yourself.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there's nothing better than having the end of a pick five and having an all, and you can just root for the longest shot. That is the best feeling.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's sometimes, like last week or a couple of weeks, for some bizarre reason, I'm always alive when they give the giveaway in the pick six at Gulfstream. I've hit it a whole bunch of times, and I hit it like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I got so lucky, because I had all on one ticket, and another ticket had like seven horses, and I would have missed on that ticket.
Oh, wow. There's nothing better. Yeah.
You can't you can't beat all.
I like this makes me feel better when I talk to someone who also likes the ponies, who's infinitely smarter than I am, because it's like, hey, you know what? Like, if you're doing it and you have an Academy Award, you're looking at your Academy Award for Forrest Gump, and you're playing a pick five at Gulfstream and losing just like me.
I think I have a bigger thrill, but look, it can get bad for people who get it way in over their head, you know, and it can be an illness, obviously.
You were mentioning that you hang out with Al Michaels a little bit out there.
Is he a pony guy? I didn't know him till now, 3 months ago, really. I did know. He used to go to Vegas the same time I did for my birthday. He would go with a guy named Hank Goldberg, who you may remember, the horse race guy, and a guy named David Israel, who was a pretty well-known sports writer in L.A. And they'd go, I think, for Al Michaels' birthday. I could be wrong, but we'd end up – somehow we always ended up together. We ended up at a crap table together. You know, we both love craps. Mm-hmm. And so recently with the pandemic, I've been walking. I've been walking with Al and Tom Werner, who owns one of the owners of the Red Sox. And Al's the greatest storyteller. He's unbelievable.
He strikes me as a guy that plays the ponies too.
He loves to play the horses. He's crazy. Yeah, he's a pretty interesting dude. I like him very much. He's a nice man.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, you know, when you talk to him, he first of all knows sports, you know, chapter and verse, every sport, and he's announced almost every sport. He announced the Belmont Stakes for like 8 years in a row, which I never knew.
I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Plus baseball, World Series, and obviously the hockey. And I'm a hockey guy like he is. We both love the King.
Yeah. So growing up on the East Coast, now you're out on the West Coast. Are you you still retain your New York fandoms?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, I realized I was at a Dodger game like this year, I think, or last year, and last year, obviously. That I probably was one of the few people who actually went to Ebbets Field in the whole ballpark. I mean, except for maybe Tommy Lasorda, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Vince Scully isn't around anymore doing it. So I remembered really well. My grandfather was a little Russian guy who never really spoke great English, but called the Pee Wee Reese. He loved Pee Wee Reese. And he'd buy a apple box. It cost you like literally a quarter or something. And we stood on apple boxes out in the outfield, you know, in the right field bleachers, basically, and watched the games. And I went to one World Series game with him where I think it was 1956 or seven. And the whole team, I could still remember, you know, like yesterday, but I could still remember what it felt like to be at that ballpark.
Wow.
But that just says I'm old.
No, but it's much more. Yeah. It's fascinating. And you have some elements of Forrest Gump in your life. You were college friends with Jim Morrison, is that correct?
Yeah, very good, very close friends. Yeah, I still have a jacket of his.
When you meet a guy like that, did you know right away, like, this guy has it?
No, except for I thought, this guy's lucky. Look how great looking this guy is. I know he's going to score all the time, you know?
Yeah.
One of the memories I had of him was I was sitting at the Hollywood Bowl, and people have to know what that looks like, but empty Hollywood Bowl, and he's rehearsing. It was just him singing, and I was sitting with his manager, a guy named Todd Shipman, and it was unbelievable. He was singing, you know, L.A. Woman. You know, I was like, I'm still friends with John Densmore, the drummer.
Yeah.
Jim was a complicated guy, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll tell you a quick story about him that he, and I'm trying to think of the guy's name now. The guy's brother's a dentist in L.A. Anyway, he wrote a book about it. This guy was a young man. He was like literally 13 years old, and he was a Doors fanatic. And he was playing Little League baseball, and the umpire said, if you hit a home run, I'll take you to a Doors concert, right? And he did. He hit a home run, he got to Doors concert. That's the story. Anyway, he then decided he wasn't going to school anymore, and he went and hung out. They used to have a recording studio on Sunset in Santa Monica. And when I drive by, I'll never forget, you know, just coming out of there. And he went there like almost every day. And finally, the Doors manager said, you can't be here. You're 13 year old. You got to get the hell out of here. So he went outside, and he was sitting on a bus bench crying. And Jim Morrison pulled up in his car, dropped off, whatever. And he said, what are you crying about? He said, he just told me I couldn't be here anymore. And he said, fuck him. He's fired. And you're our new manager. And it's a true story.
Jesus.
They let this kid manage them when he was 13 or 14 years old. And he went on to manage like Iggy Pop and a couple other people.
Wow.
He was pretty well known. I don't know if he really did anything, but we were going to, Fincher wanted to make that into a movie. And the guy from Limp Bizkit was going to direct it.
Fred Durst?
Yeah, I liked him. He was a pretty great guy.
Hell yeah.
And nothing happened with it. We were going to do sort of a movie like, you remember the French director of Truffaut about sort of people growing up, what it feels like to grow up. Anyway, I thought it was a great story.
That's fat. I would have loved to see a movie directed by Fred Durst.
Yeah.
I wish that had happened.
Fred Durst, yeah. Fred came out to my house a bunch of times, and he has a son named Cowboy. And Fred's he's an interesting dude, I'll tell you. I mean, I was never a fan one way or another of his music particularly, but he certainly he's cutting edge. And I remember him sending me, I don't know if he wants to have me say this, but pretty outrageous photographs of him with women from like Lithuania, from some concerts he was at there, you know.
Is he still rocking the backwards red hat all the time?
I don't know. I haven't seen him. I mean, we out of the blue, he like would text me, you know, and then we talk through that, and we just haven't gotten together. I just thought he was a great guy. Just a great
interesting. Guy. I want to jump back to one thing that you mentioned was the beginning of Ali, where it was, I think it was Sam Cooke that was singing, right?
Sam Cooke is exactly right.
Yeah. Great, great singer. The use of montages in movies has always fascinated me because from a writing perspective, it's almost like a cheat code where you're like, okay, I get to eat up 3 minutes of this.
That's
script.
Right. Well, you're very smart. I mean, first of all, that started with the Russian Sergei Eisenstein, a movie called Battle of Potemkin, a battleship Potemkin. He began with the montage, but you know, it's like, You can't tell someone's whole life story. It would take you, you know, if it's 30 years of a guy's life, it could take you 30 years. So you have to figure out ways to do impressions of things of people's lives, right? And so you have to condense that to 2 hours or whatever. So that's exactly what a montage does. And I used to call these, I don't know what they call them, like round delays, where you'd have something in the middle and then three or four things going on around it, where you keep cutting back and forth. Ali has that in it.
Is there a limit to how many montages you'll put in a movie?
I don't think there's. I think you don't want to do too many because it's sort of like it's a little bit of a cheat and it starts getting a little too familiar. I think it's okay to intercut though, which are almost like montages where you have some central piece of action. They do this always in action movies and stuff where you're going back and forth between, so you have a tension between what's going on. You know?
Here's an idea. What about a movie that's just one montage? Hour and a half long montage.
Mm. Well, I think that'd be okay, but I think you feel like it looked like a commercial.
Yeah, true.
Commercials are cool.
Like some can be great. I mean, I think you could. I don't know if you could do an hour and a half one. I mean, the opposite of those movies like Andy Warhol used to make, like a movie called Sleep. Right, he had a guy sleeping for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And you can go in any time. I'll tell you, an amazing movie. I don't know why you reminded me of this. Is that there's a movie called The Clock that an artist did, an English artist, and they show it in museums. And what he did was take from every movie he could find. He had people research it. Like, let's assume he's looking for something that says either on a watch or a clock, 11:14. And every minute he has another shot from a movie that shows the time. And he does it for 24 hours. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. So there you go. That's something close to what you're suggesting.
Yeah. Yes. What about the movie 1917? Is that like a little bit of a cheat too, where you don't have to worry about writing like exterior, setting up new shots and stuff since it's all one shot?
I don't know if it's a cheat. I mean, I think everything's trying to find a way to dramatize things, you know? So classic structure is three acts, right? Shakespeare did four acts, but you have your setup, right? You know, present the problem, complicate the problem, and then solve the problem. That's basically what writing is, you know. And the third act, your catharsis, you know, something. And then you either do it by within the characters themselves, or what they call deus ex machina. You bring in a sort of god in a machine, is what that literally translates to. That you're just going to solve this by some magic, you know. But you can, my scripts are particularly long because I'm a frustrated novelist. And so it's like Brad Pitt had a great line for me once. We were doing a read through of Benjamin Button. And he said, look at Eric, he's got a prose boner, which is pretty funny. And I've written scripts of like the 70, 80 pages too, where, you know, in other words, if you can tell it in a short period of time, that could be better.
What's since you've been in the industry for so long and you know all these movies, you've written some of the best, what are, if you had to pick five movies to take with you, those are the five movies you can watch for the rest of your life and no other movies, what are Eric Ross' five movies? Can't be your own.
Yeah, I think those are hard, but I think definitely Godfather 2. Mm-hmm. Not without it, without a question. 2001.
Okay.
Space Odyssey.
Okay.
Amacord, the Fellini movie, which you may or may not know. Then you're going to get me. Maybe Citizen Kane. Okay. Maybe. And the fifth one.
Dude, the fifth one has to be the last decade.
The last, oh, from 2000
yeah,
to 2000.
2010 to 2020 for your last one.
Is the Fight Club in that era?
Yeah, we'll count that.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
modernist.
That's close enough.
I would take the Fight Club, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, David Fincher's Beyond. I mean, of everybody, I mean, I haven't made a movie with Marty. We've done a few warm-ups, you know, and I gave him the book of The Irishman, which is called Here You Paint Houses. But David Fincher, to me, is the best, let's say Marty and him, best living directors. David's unbelievable.
So it sounds like you know everybody in Hollywood, just like the names that you've listed in the like 20 minutes.
I've been around for almost 60 years. You know?
Yeah.
Who's the most famous person right now in Hollywood that you don't know?
That I don't know? I don't really know Quentin Tarantino.
Ah.
That would be off the top of my head. I don't know. Some of the younger directors I don't really know. I don't know Damien Chazelle. I've met him, but I don't know him. I mean, I've been around so long. I worked for John Wayne. I did a treatment for John Wayne at one point.
Wow.
But that's just age, you know?
Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's incredible.
You guys 30 years from now can talk about all the sports people you knew and everything.
Blake Bortles.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Big
you guys
time.
Are immortal. You yeah. guys are immortals. Yeah, exactly.
This has been fantastic. I have one last question, and mind you, we can totally cut this out if it's too like personal or anything. But
things I'll answer. The only thing I won't usually. I mean, everybody said you should write a memoir, and I know too many things about people that I wouldn't do it because I'd have to tell the truth, and it would be too hurtful.
Yeah. So the question I was going to ask, and again, you can just say cut this out, but you were involved in the Bernie Madoff scam. You lost money.
Yeah.
What was that moment like where that shock? Because I think a lot of people go through it in their head and they're like, oh, my God.
I had two reactions. One was my business manager said, are you sitting down? Right. This was almost like Christmas Eve or something.
Yeah.
He said, all that money's gone. I said, So I mean, I was upset by it, but on the other hand, I thought the whole thing was weird anyway, because I got involved. I think I didn't invest really a ton of money. I mean, for me, it was a lot of money, like $10,000, let's say. But every 4 years, you got these statements where you had like, I think we ended up supposedly having like $12 million, $15 million, you know, but on the other hand, it's like a weird thing with, it was like a short story, you know what I'm saying? Like, what yeah. I never did a penny, I did nothing to earn it. I knew nothing about anything with financial stuff. And I didn't even know what the guy was doing. I mean, it was a guy named Stan Chase who ran the operation in Los Angeles and Hollywood. He had a lot of Hollywood people. I think Spielberg got involved and Jeffrey Katzenberg and other people. And people lost some real money. And I was explained that he was doing some sort of thing called an arbitrage, which was sort of middling like a blue chip stocks and you get a percentage of it. It was all bullshit, but I didn't really care. I said, look, if he's winning this money playing, you know, games, you know, he's betting sports and doing it, good for him, because it kept showing these profits.
Right.
But I thought they were kind of ridiculous without, you know, you're getting 25% on your money every year.
Right.
Which is, you're doubling every 2-4 years. It's like ludicrous.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the money, though, I did think was my retirement, you know, and then there it went. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be quite a conversation to have to, like, just sort through that mentally. Might take you a couple days to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. No, it was. Yeah. I think we ended up getting a little money back, actually.
Did you, did you go and read the books or, like, get fascinated with it, even though it was pretty close to home?
No, I thought I just was a sucker for a Ponzi scheme, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was actually, in a way, I hate to say this because he took so much money from people, charities and stuff. It was sort of good for him in a way. It was like he pulled a great con.
Right.
But I didn't have any. I just thought it was pretty clever. I mean, they're psychologically genius because they literally would just send over a fax machine, a completely just, there's nothing fancy. They didn't send you big kind of brochures or anything of how you're doing. They just piece of paper, and it just said on it, my corporation was called Vanessa Corporation at the time or something. And it just said how much money you had in there, how much you made as profit, how much, you know, that kind of thing. Wow. And then they wouldn't let, I said, well, this is too good to be true, but maybe it's true. And I try to get like my dad involved, right? And they wouldn't take, the other thing, they wouldn't take any new people. You had to have, it's just your investment, period.
Wow.
And yeah, it's pretty clever thing psychologically. I think it just appealed to greed, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed a lot recently is that there are a lot of biopics that come out, and some of them come out while the person is still alive and their story is still very much being told. And then there's the other, which is like the retrospect. Maybe they've been passed away for a couple of years and kind of their legacy has time to cement itself a little bit. If you're writing that person's story, is it more difficult to write about somebody who passed away 20 years ago? Or is it easier to write about somebody who's still alive and can very much be like,
I think both, it depends on the lives. I think they're both possible, and probably I have to find some way in on both of them. I mean, I did a screenplay that's probably never going to see the light of day, but on a guy who's alive, who I love, and David Geffen. And, you know, and he's alive, and, you know, I know him, as I said, I adore him, warts and all. So we did some of that. And so that was just that had the advantage of this man who, aside from being so wealthy, but did really good things for the planet. And also, was so instrumental in the music that was basically the soundtrack of my life. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that one was the music that really appealed to me. Other biographies, I mean, I think, trying to think, Ali was obviously that guy. He meant so much to me. I mean, I think the main thing about writing anything like Boner Dogs, which I'm working on,
mm-hmm.
is
right, what
you have to have passion. You have to have passion about it. You know,
you should. If you could, you just write Boner Dogs and then bury it somewhere. And then in like 30 years, we'll go find it. And then that will be its own movie. Us finding the script to Boner Dogs.
But maybe I just leave you clues on how to find it.
There you go.
Imagine if we just did
a documentary about finding the script.
Yeah, instead of Boner Dogs, we just do a documentary about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like National Treasure, one of those movies.
Yes.
You know,
uh-huh.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do it somehow involved with sports, though.
Yeah.
That's sort of what we're calling this Barstool Radio about, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And you're just killing time now before sports start up again.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, yeah. I was with Tom Werner today. He came over to talk, and it was like they seem to actually maybe be moving toward getting baseball going in some way.
Yeah.
They would like to.
Yeah.
Know? I think it's complicated like every sport. Hockey seems very possible.
Yes. And basketball seems like it's going to happen as well.
Yeah. And then I don't know anything about it, but Al Michaels felt pretty serious that football is going to happen, what you like it or not.
Yeah, the NFL doesn't care. They're just going full steam ahead. Yeah.
That's what I wondered. Don't they have any protocols?
No.
What virus?
Yeah.
Rub some dirt on it. That's their protocol.
Guess what you won't be thinking about when it's 1 o'clock on a Sunday and you fire up the Red Zone channel? The coronavirus. So they know that.
Oh, by the way, hello. I mean, it's like even I, and this is cruel, but I remember seeing a thing about like Tony Dorsett, I think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe he has that CTE. I think he might. Anyway, I was reading on the internet some story about some famous football player who had it, and my eye went to the right that said the greatest runs in whatever NFL history, and forget about the CTE. I was watching these runs, and I said, that's pretty rotten.
Yeah, it's true. The NFL definitely plows right ahead. Well,
but you can, my partner being, as I said, a doctor and pretty savvy, so we sometimes watch, and I won't mention names, but I like to watch those, the training camp things, the Hard Knocks.
Yeah. Yep.
They're pretty great. And the one on the Raiders was amazing. And she could tell you people who have CTE already because they start believing in demons and things, you know, and it's pretty tragic.
Yeah.
But what's better than NFL football?
Nothing. This has been great. We really appreciate your time. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. We didn't talk any sports. What the hell?
It's been awesome to talk.
I'll do it again. We'll talk about next time gamblers.
Yes.
Like poker players.
Yes.
Like Tobey Maguire.
Yes. Yeah, we'll leave something on there so we can do it again.
Absolutely. Do you have a poker game, a Hollywood poker game?
No, I don't. I just enjoy watching, and I know that Tobey Maguire is the best poker player in America. And I could tell you also stories about a lot of Vegas guys, you know, like lunatics, you know?
Yeah.
But that's, it's just, I just find it fun, but it's not my life.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Tell you what, we'll let you go. We'll let you get to work on Boner Dogs. And
I know.
We'll start the documentary on our
I'm just, the title sequence is almost done.
Perfect. That's what I want to hear. Well, thank you so much. We really
appreciate
it.
I love this.
Yeah.
This is so funny. I love that my son set this up so ridiculous.
Absolutely. That's how we get to a lot of our guests, to be honest.
I know, and you've had the best. You had Koopelman on here.
Yeah.
You know him?
He's a good friend.
I only know him on telephone, but I think he wrote the best gambling movie ever written, probably.
Rounders. He told us what the last hand was. Do you know it?
No, I don't know it well enough.
Well, thank you so much. You're always welcome back on, so we'd love to do it again sometime.
I'll do it anytime you want. I'd love this. Yeah. Well, you guys stay safe, okay? No illness, please.
Yeah,
you too.
You too.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay. Before we get to our Mount Rushmore, we are reviewing Sour Grapes on Friday's show. Sour Grapes?
Sour Grapes. I'm told it's a documentary about a young man who swindles professional wine collectors. So that sounds good to me.
How can you watch it? How can the people watch it?
I know it's on Netflix.
Okay, Netflix.
I don't know where else, but it's on Netflix.
Boom. Boom. All right. Perfect. So Sour Grapes, Friday's show. Get ready for it. Let's do Mount Rushmore. We're going to do a Mount Rushmore in honor of Billy Football getting a new puppy. Mount Rushmore of things we love about dogs. So, Billy, we will let you start. We'll have Billy start, PFT, then myself, then we'll come back around. Billy, Mount Rushmore of things we love about dogs.
Okay, so something my new puppy does is that he's got these huge paws because he's going to be like 120 pounds, and right now he's really small. So whenever he runs really fast, he falls over and does a somersault, but is able to like get back into like running, and it's like the cutest thing ever.
When they trip and recover.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cute. I love how puppies are so resilient, and dogs are resilient in general. Like, if they fall down, nothing fazes them.
Good pick, Billy.
My first one, I'm going to go with their greetings. A dog greeting, nothing like it. If you've been away from your house for a long time, you come back home, the instant your dog sees you and recognizes you, it makes you feel like you're the best person in the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was a pretty easy one there. I had that as well. I'll go the inquisitive ears / look. When a noise or, you know, like your dog's like trying to learn something new and they give you that sideways glance.
The head tilt.
Oh, the best. The head tilt and the ears. Tell his ears pop up and she's like, what's that?
Yeah, the head tilt is so cute.
Yes. All right. My second pick, I will go with when they simply hop up and sit next to you, lay next to you, curl up next to you, and they're like, let's just have some good time where we just kind of just chill and you pet me and I'm just going to chill here and we're going to have fun.
It's one of those moments where you know that they love you as much as you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just melts your heart.
Yeah. Good old times with the dog just sitting on the couch
right now.
All right. PFT.
My next one, I'm going to go with something that we've talked about on the show before, the smell of their feet.
Mm-hmm.
I love a good dog foot smell. We call it the free toes because it smells like corn chips and it's on their little nails.
Yep.
It's so cute.
Yep.
My next pick, sort of in the same vein as Big Cat, but when they pick up on your emotions.
Mm.
It's like when you're sick and your dog knows and lays down next to you. Yeah, that's a good one.
Or, you know, it's like something happens and you're kind of like tweaking out, and they just like run up to you and just like be like, yo, what's going on? Chill out.
Yep.
I like that Billy went there, like when you're tweaking heavy off pre-workout and your dog can tell.
Like, and it just, shit, it's lifting time.
It lifts, it puts its chin on you to calm you down, to reduce your heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
okay,
it?
You got another one.
Snake draft.
Snake draft.
When you haven't done cardio recently and it makes you take it for a run so that you can lose some of that body fat.
That's one of the reasons I got a dog. When they are shy. So my puppy, he's really shy. So like the first dog he ever met was like a Shih Tzu, and it's like a 15-pound dog, and my dog's like a 20-pound puppy. And he like was totally scared of this tiny Shih Tzu. And
you like it when dogs are scared?
Well, no, but like tail between legs, like shy, like ran behind me. And I was like, this is a freaking like fluff ball. Like,
okay.
I will say that there was one time that I took Leroy to a dog park, and a Chihuahua got buck at him. And Leroy at the time, I think, was about 180 pounds.
Yeah.
And the Chihuahua was 3 or 4 pounds. And Leroy ran across the entire park with his tail between his legs and hid behind me.
Yep.
From, and then everyone was laughing at him.
Yeah.
And he didn't know, but it was cute.
It was so cute.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Good choice. I'm going to go with when they're eating food, when you fed them, and they take a few bites, and then they turn around and they look at you and wag their tail while they're eating. And
this shit's good.
They're definitely saying, thank you for feeding
me. Yeah, this shit's awesome.
That's so fucking cute.
This shit's boss. Okay, I'll go with... When I assume most dogs do this, but Stella does it 'cause she's smaller. When they're laying down or curled up and they tuck their nose underneath their back leg, they tuck their nose in for a little warmth. That's the cutest thing ever. Does your dog do that, Liam? Yeah. Bubba's dog. I don't know if Leroy might be too big.
He's not spry.
He's not flexible enough. He's got it. You got to get him into some Pilates.
But that's
dude.
Like that's like what a bird does when they fall. So they tuck their beak
in their
wings.
Tucks right in, and it's just so fucking cute. And then I'll go with my last pick: the first tennis ball throw. The first tennis ball throw when your dog just loses their fucking mind and they're like, "This is awesome!" And that like first burst of energy, nothing better.
Yeah. The way they take off.
They run so fast, and they're so excited, and it's, like, the best thing ever. And then Stella usually stops after, like, throw 4. But that first throw, it's fucking sick.
That's really good.
Stella has that thing where, you know some dogs are, like, a little too smart for their own good? After the fourth throw, she's like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
I got the tennis ball.
Why
do I keep bringing it back to you?
Yes.
You keep throwing it away.
She just will go, and then she'll literally just run by it and be like, no, I'm not bringing that back to you. I'm going to fucking go and run around.
That's the Kenny Powers method. It's like, I'm not going to pick that shit up. It's heavy.
Yeah.
My last one, that they're very good.
Oh, that's a cop-out. Come on.
Do you want a different one?
Yeah, do a different one.
When they nail a scoop.
When they nail a scoop?
Yeah, when they nail a scoop.
Okay.
Very good dogs.
That's fair. Okay. All right.
You know what Billy just did?
Yeah, he did the dog.
Billy just did the dog
tilt of the
head tilt.
Yeah, head tilt.
Like,
huh?
I'm learning something.
Huh?
When the scoop?
When a dog nails a scoop.
Okay. Bye. My last one is when they kind of have that sort of in the same vein of the first tennis throw, when they just freak out and just like... Like, they're just super energized.
Wait, what?
They just freak out.
For what?
Because they're scared, which is...
No. They just freak out. They just run around like a crackhead.
For what?
For anything. I don't know. Sometimes they just start running.
Can I try to translate you, Billy?
The zoomies. Yes.
So you're talking about when a dog just has so much energy, they don't know what to do with themselves, and they, like, jump up in the air, or they run past you, as Big Cat's referring to.
Yeah, the zoomies. When it just goes back and forth.
Yeah, and then he does the somersault.
That means you need to walk your dog.
I know, but it's so cute.
Yeah.
It's just they're running around.
No, you also have a puppy, so that's fair. There was times when we would go, when Stella was a puppy, or just like a young dog, we'd go for a fucking crazy long walk to the park, and then still at night she would just like fucking bolt with energy.
Yeah, it's like awesome.
All right, things that missed. How about that all dogs go to heaven?
That's also true. Yeah.
Yep. When they kiss you on the lips.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I had roll
in the grass, which people say they're actually just rolling in poop. Usually,
don't be the fact checker.
News.
That's like, this,
listen,
please don't share this picture of a dog kissing you on the lips. They only do that because they're nervous.
Yeah,
like,
fuck that.
Yeah,
no,
I hate that.
No.
I think mama dogs are really cute with their puppies.
Yes.
When they like make sure that they're all warm.
When they grab them by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah, that's so cute.
That's the best.
A mama dog carrying a baby dog around, a puppy around is so cute.
What about first time the father dog gets to see the litter?
Oh.
Look what I did. I made this.
Yeah. He's like, what? Oh. Me?
Yeah, I guess I have to.
My kids?
He's like, those kids aren't mine.
Specifically, more specific on the greetings. My favorite is the greeting when they're so excited that they like almost like bow and they go like anti-energy. Mm-hmm. You know, when like a greeting can be happy jumping up, but when they're like losing their mind so much, they almost like try to crawl underneath you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bubba.
I've had beagles, and my old dog specifically, its ears would get in the water when she would drink water and then get up and then shake her head off every time.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Hell
was
yes.
So when they don't know that they're in water and they shake to try to get dry, that's always cute too.
When they find the sunspot in the apartment and then they start panting because they're so fucking hot, and you're like, you idiot.
Yeah.
You're the one who sat there.
Dude. So I taught my puppy to swim the other day, and now every time I pick it up, like with two hands, it just starts trying to swim.
Dude, make a video.
I'll make a video.
What are you doing, Billy? Make a fucking video and then give it to us, and we're going to tweet it from Pardon My Take.
Okay, I will. It does a thing.
Are you wearing a collar?
No, I just. It's my chain.
You sound like you're wearing a collar. Do it again. Billy's excited, everyone.
No. Then when my puppy loves belly rubs, so sometimes he'll just run at me and just jump and land on its back and just be like, rub me.
Ooh, yes. You know what another good one is? When they get a scratch, when you scratch them, and they start doing the leg
thing on their own.
The phantom itch is a good one.
The peanut butter on the nose and watching them just lick it off with their fucking big tongue, that's the best.
Oh, when they hear a can opener.
Yeah.
When you can see them start to learn something.
Or a bag. Anytime I stand up.
Packaging, when I open a box.
Stella just follows me because she knows that if I stand up, there's like an 80% chance I'm getting food.
What's really cool is sometimes, so I used to bring Leroy into the bathroom with me when he was a little puppy because I couldn't trust.
You freak a deek.
No, I couldn't trust him by himself, like in my bedroom or roaming the house
as a little
dog.
Yeah, that's a good excuse.
So I would just like bring him in there and I'd handle my business and leave. So every now and again, if I'm in the bathroom, he comes in and he just noses the door open and just checks in on me. He's like, okay, you're there. And then just walks out.
Yep.
Oh, you know what another really cute thing is? When your dog decides that it's time to go to bed at night.
Yes.
So like
puts themselves to bed.
Sometimes Leroy would be like downstairs as I'm watching television. And then at like 10:30, he would just stand up calmly and walk upstairs and go to his couch. It's like he decided it was bedtime.
Yep. It's time to go. I know I'll get people say I'm a bad dog owner for this one, but I do love when she doesn't do it often, but every now and then Stella will put her paws up on the kitchen counter when I'm like making something, and that's the cutest thing ever.
You're a bad dog owner.
Yeah, bad dog owner.
Oh, one more. My puppy, it hasn't been around other male dogs yet, so it still pisses without putting its leg up.
You got to teach it. That's on you, Billy. You got to get in the backyard on all fours and lift your leg up.
I'll take him into the bathroom with me. And we'll do it there.
No, you got to. No, it's not going to understand. Then it's going to pee in the bathroom. You have to take your dog out back, and you need to pee by lifting your leg.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take a video too.
Yeah, do that. Not necessary. Show us that.
Also, speaking of dogs peeing, when they hold their bladder for 18 hours because the elevator in your apartment's broken,
Leroy
did yesterday.
That's huge.
You went from 11 p.m. at night until 6 p.m. the next day without peeing because the elevator was broken. I couldn't carry him down the stairs because it was too narrow and he's too heavy and he wiggles when you pick him up. So I didn't want him to fall on his ass and hurt himself.
Right.
And so I was just expecting that he was going to pee on the living room floor. It was newspapers everywhere and stuff. He held his bladder for 18 hours and then he got outside and he let loose the floods of hell. Like Noah was building an ark in the street.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you know that he didn't learn how to use the toilet from you all those times in the bathroom?
He's secretly taking a piss?
Yeah.
That would suck if you caught Leroy jerking off into the toilet. He's like, how'd you learn that?
Yeah.
All right, only other one I had was when they hear themselves on video. Like if you play a video of them barking or whining and then they start whining or barking, they're like, hey, that's me.
Also, I had one of those fake fireplaces and my dog would run up to it and like get scared, like looking at the reflection.
Yes. Dog in a mirror is great.
Yes.
A dog watching a dog show on television is pretty good too.
Yep.
We don't deserve
dogs are the best. They are.
Learning how to climb stairs. Last one.
There you go.
That's
is that for you or the dog?
Forever. No, it's the puppy. Like they get stuck.
Got it.
They get stuck in the middle of the stairs, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And you're like, "Look, man, you're on your own, man. Deal with it."
All right, let's finish up. We got a couple guys on chicks. Bubba, you gonna read them to us?
So I've been seeing/hooking up with this guy for like 6 months, and a month ago, when I was blackout, I think, in parentheses, emphasis on I think. He asked me to be his girlfriend, and I guess I said yes. Since then, he's been saying stuff to other people like dating, girlfriend, relationship, etc. Do I just go with it? Do I have a boyfriend now? Or do I ever bring up that I was blacked out?
I think you got a boyfriend.
Is it?
I think it's too late.
Is it Facebook official?
I think it's too late. I think if he's going around saying like, oh, this is my girlfriend, you probably should have had that conversation already. So now you got
to
go.
No. You get him drunk and then explain to him that you're not his girlfriend and he won't remember it. And
that's true. Double psych. Yeah. That's good. Good call. Yeah. I like that. Or you could break up with him. And then if he's like, what are you talking about? You're like, okay, good. That was just a joke. And then if he's really upset, it's like, you know that he thought that you were boyfriend and girlfriend.
I'm rooting for them to get married. That would be awesome.
Without,
like, hey, I actually was never even your girlfriend.
Actually, just you got to one up him, get him drunk, and then marry him.
Propose.
And then marry his ass.
Yeah.
Or we'll just break up with him for you. Just send this to him. We'll say it.
Yeah, that's true. Billy will. Okay, next one.
Sup, Hank, Dougs, and Mr. Commenter. My boyfriend runs to the bathroom almost immediately every time we have sex. I figured he just had a small bladder until recently I heard him making noises. I confronted him about it, and he explained it. When you pee after you have sex, it basically feels like you're coming again, he said.
No.
He calls it his pee-gasm.
No.
This guy, is this true, this or is he a psychopath?
He's convinced. This guy read the wrong message board, and his own brain convinced him that it was true. Like, if you pee right after you have sex, you get extra testosterone. The fact is, before you go pee, every guy has to actually finish on the carpet beside their bed. And it's way better, actually, if you just piss on top of that.
This guy, I mean, I think everyone's body's different, so maybe he really is gasming twice. Let him be.
Or he's just flushing the pipes, you know?
Hey, guys. I started staying at my boyfriend's apartment more often during quarantine. I think after I fall asleep, he goes back into the living room to play video games at night. I've noticed there was beer cans and snacks out in the living room that weren't there when we went to bed. Should I be concerned, or is this not a big deal?
He's leaving them out for Santa. I think it's fine. He's obviously still learning how to coexist with a woman, and he could probably just ask you, hey, is it cool if I go out and I play video games?
Mm-hmm.
But right now, he's got a guilty conscience behind that somehow.
Right.
You got to find out why he feels bad about playing video games.
Let him know it's okay. Billy?
It's a weird
doesn't
time.
Talk to girls. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Get profound.
Just let him do what he's got to do to deal with it.
It's a weird time.
That's how he blows off steam?
Yeah. I mean, imagine if he doesn't do that. Like, what's he going to do?
Billy definitely would be like playing video games. Like, you've been playing video games for fucking 15 hours, Billy. It's like, have you seen it? Have you seen the news? Fucking weird time. We all cope differently.
All things considered, that's a pretty healthy secret that he's keeping from you.
Yeah.
I've honestly been using the excuse, like, to do, like, stupid stuff, like, weird times, like, there's no rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you could also reverse that on him, too, and wait for him to fall asleep, and then go out one night and just go to the living room and pound an entire bag of Franzia and watch Sex and the City and leave the DVDs out.
All right, last one?
Yep, last one. Sup, boys. I broke up with my long-term boyfriend right before quarantine began. We had several trips planned together, which obviously we canceled since we broke up. My ex randomly sent me half the cost of the trip that I never paid for to begin with. Do I send it back? Do I keep it? Should I invest it in the stock market? What should I do with this?
He sent you an invoice?
No, he thought that they split it, and they paid it.
So he sent her an invoice, like, hey, accounts receivable needs $1,000 for our boat ride to Charlottesville or something like that.
I'm going to be honest, I have no idea what
he thought. He thought she paid for half of it, and she never gave him the half. And then he sent her the half back.
He gave her a check.
Yes.
All right. I think that's fun money. You spend, what you need to do is find the dumbest thing possible that you can buy with that money and then spend all of it on that. Like, I'm talking about, I saw a jumpsuit that was $2,000 in Neiman Marcus one time. I didn't buy it because I didn't have $2,000 on me at the time, but every day goes by and I wish that I had just dropped 2 G's on a jumpsuit.
Keep that, so queen.
Spend it on something stupid as fuck.
Get it, queen.
And enjoy it.
Do your thing. Billy is very confused. Dog look again.
I don't understand what the money, what?
We should do a Mount Rushmore of cutest things Billy does.
Pronounces Waluigi.
When he lies to us and then admits that he was lying to us, but it's always a simple lie, so we can't stay mad.
It was a...
Today he came and worked out with two people, and we told him he could work out, but not with two people. And then we said, Billy, why didn't you tell us? And he didn't say, oh, my bad, I was lying to you. He just said, I didn't think anyone was going to be here.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to get
Irish entrance.
So he literally was like, I have no remorse of lying. I have more remorse that everyone was here.
The thing I like about Billy is he doesn't lie about why he lies. He's very honest about,
yeah,
about
like, his untruth. Lying is cool. Getting caught lying sucks.
Yeah, right. Billy makes me feel like the greatest detective of all time because I can always get to the answer within like 30 seconds. Hard questioning. Billy, why did you bring the extra people? Well, I didn't think you guys were going to be here.
Flashing back to the last guys on Chick's question, though, I feel like you might have let a good one get away. A guy that sends you a check after like a month of being broken up, being like, oh, I just remembered that you bought this vacation for us. Here's either that or he's a big-time simp.
Yeah.
He's probably just trying to,
he's trying to win you
simp
back.
His way back in. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. All right, that's our show. Everyone stay safe. We will see you on Friday. We got a recurring guest. Don't know which one we're going to run, but we got a recurring guest coming up on Friday. Watch Sour Grapes. Also, do not tell Hank the word is chin.
Don't say it. Don't you dare say it. Stay safe and take care of each other. I love you guys.
Say love you guys.
Love you guys. Thanks for having me.
Talk to the mic, Billy. Talking away.
To be safe and sorry. Take on.